to Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get her own rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three.
Got it.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Friends, enemies, and anyone in between, welcome back to this show that we call the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND. I'm Leo Stoddard, your sports director here at WZND and the host of the Red Zone. We're joined in a little bit of a different setup this week, but the voice you just heard was our producer, Joe Kennedy of TV10 of the Naperville Trolley Company. Joe, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. You know, we got a different setting, and I think it's for the best right now tonight.
Maybe for the better.
We got a little substitution coming in tonight for Joey Dwyer.
As Joe teased there, the third voice on our show tonight will be Mr. Dane Dreyfus. Dreyfus, WZND's assistant client services director, a former DJ, maybe current DJ. I think he's former. But the new and improved third voice on our show tonight, filling in for Joey Dwyer, who is away on assignment, but could be back in the next couple weeks. We'll just have to see about that
one.
But welcome to the show, Dane.
Thank you so much for having me, a longtime listener. And I know I got some big shoes to fill with Joey Dwyer, literally.
Oh, yeah.
Very tall man. But I'm really looking forward to it. And we got some high stakes, three up, three down. So we'll get into that later. But I'm pumped to see Joey's picks.
And Dane, last semester, you took the DJ shift that was right after the Red Zone. So we would always have almost a second Red Zone off air with Dane after. We would be talking about everything. So, I mean, Dane, you said you've been listening to things since last semester. And we've been talking about sports for a while, so I think it'll be a great show today.
So I guess while we have you on first, let's just have you go brutally honest. How should we improve the show? Let's get your honest opinions on what did we do wrong last semester.
Less Joey Dwyer, that's for sure. Yeah. More Dane Dreyfus. But you know what? You need some more screaming hot takes. That's definitely what you can improve on. I know I've been one to have a few hot takes here and there, and I would get absolutely roasted for it. But you know what? I wouldn't rather have it any other way.
Yeah, all Joey has some hot takes every now and then. I'm pretty often, I would say. More hot than good, or more bad than good, I would say.
And we'll see if Dane brings that tonight. We got a loaded show come up tonight. Mm-hmm. We're going to start things off with some Redbird recapping. We're going to talk some women's basketball, some baseball, and keeping things on the diamond. Then we're going to have an interview coming up at around 6:15 with ISU baseball pitcher Jared Hart. He just came off a huge weekend, MVC pitcher of the weekend. I thought that was a pretty good interview. He had a lot of good stuff to say.
Mm-hmm.
Then Brendan McInerney is going to join the show. We're going to talk some college basketball because, believe it or not, we're almost in March and the tournament is approaching. We'll round things up with the last three up, three down of the semester of our Red Zone careers. So this will be a big one. Joe might even shed some tears.
We'll see, man. I mean, I'm mathematically out of it, but it's been a great couple of years in that format, though.
Hey, all I got to say is good teams win, great teams cover, Joe.
Yeah,
and I think you covered this year.
I think I did. I was starting off really bad in that segment. But
well, let's start things off on the hardwood here tonight because ISU women's basketball came in with a big weekend into Redbird Arena, their final homestand of the season. They came into the weekend in first place facing the second-seeded Missouri State Bears and then the third-seeded Southern Illinois Salukis. And this was a tough weekend for the Birds as they dropped both of those games.
Yeah.
Slow starts really doomed them in each of them. It was just really probably the worst possible outcome you could have as now they're sitting in third in the conference.
And they came in with so much momentum. They won six out of their last seven games, I believe. And then I didn't get to watch all of the Missouri State game, but when I was at the game on Sunday against Southern Illinois, and right from the start of that, they didn't lead for 1 second. If they believe the first possession of the game, Southern Illinois makes a three-point shot, goes on a little bit of a run, and then they just were in control that entire game. I mean, there's spurts of that game where Illinois State was getting things going a little bit, but things just weren't clicking well, and it just wasn't a great feeling in the stadium, I feel
like. I thought they had a really good fourth quarter, but it still felt like Southern kind of went into prevent mode.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were letting them get those more wide-open looks and were just kind of working the clock and just not putting their foot on the gas as much as they were in the first. But I think that's the case both times, was they just didn't get that good start because in the Missouri State game, they had a really good finish. They looked solid in the third and fourth quarter, but it was a little too little too late. And so those slow starts, that's what kind of doomed them. And I mean, that could work in their favor, as you saw two teams that you're going to have to go through if you want to win hoops in the Heartland, but it's just going to make that a tougher road now because their chances of getting an at-large bid now are probably gone. They basically now have to win the conference tournament if they want to be playing in the NCAA tourney.
Yeah, pretty much like that for all the Valley at the moment, I feel like. In Southern Illinois, just looking at the conference schedule and the Redbirds have a tough time against the Salukis this year. Both times are held under 49 points, and that was the only time it happened throughout this entire season.
You know what, though? Coming up in the conference play, though, in the conference tournament, it is so hard to beat a team three times in a row and absolutely sweep them, especially in the sport of basketball and especially during conference play where the team is 11-4. I mean, you gotta build on that and just have confidence going against them that there's no, like, the pressure's on them. They're 2-0 against you this year. And you know what? You got Juju Redmond's final season. You gotta play for her and you gotta try and sneak out a win there.
Yeah. And going with back to the game and everything, back to the Southern Illinois in both games, Mary Crompton, especially this weekend, Mary Crompton, only 8 points on Sunday, which is still a decent amount, but then when it really mattered on Sunday, it just seemed like they weren't getting, on Sunday when they played Southern, it just seemed like they weren't getting the ball to her as much and trying to get her open as much as you would like, because we've been saying all year long, back to last year, she's one of the best shooters in the NCAA, and you got to use her as an advantage.
I will say about that, she wasn't making her shots in the first half, and you could kind of tell maybe her confidence was getting shaken. Then she nailed two back-to-back threes in the third quarter, and it seemed like that really woke up her game. So maybe she was taking a little bit of momentum after that, because then she got another two-pointer later. She got 8 points in a really quick span, so I think that was something to build off, because she had a tough night on Friday, only getting 3 points in a decreased role. And not to talk about Friday, I hate being the guy that complains about maybe not officiating, but it's the way Missouri State always plays, where they play maybe this brand of basketball that's more physical than you see any other school play, and they were being really rough, and it looked like that was what the Redbirds were having a hard time adjusting with, was how physical Missouri State was playing under the baskets, because the Redbirds are a speed finesse team, and then Missouri State was just playing a little bit tougher on them, and a lot of stuff was going uncalled. But I think it still says Juju Redmond was able to scrape out 21 points in that game, 23 on Sunday, in games where she was facing double teams in the top assignments. She was still able to put up her numbers.
Yeah, and guys, so this is kind of going to the next point I wanted to get to before we head into a little Redbird baseball. Juju Redmond, she's gone after this season, and the stuff she has done for this program last year and this year, I mean, she's won games single-handedly in both of these seasons. I don't know where they would be right now without her. What do you expect from next year when Juju Redmond's out of this program?
I mean, no Illinois State basketball player has ever been drafted to the WNBA.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's making her case where she could be the first to do that. Worst case scenario, she's a pro player, whether that's somewhere overseas or somewhere in the States, she's going to be playing basketball at the next level. She's just really shown that. And I think that it's really a great testament to her that she went the JUCO route, wasn't even a starter her first full season with the Redbirds, worked into that starting lineup as the year went on, and is now not just the top player in the Valley, but one of the tops in the nation. I think that just shows how much she's accomplished over her college career.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, she leads the Birds in so many stats, not only offensively but defensively, just leading the team in steals, contributing with blocks here and there, and just averaging 17. She's so valuable to this team. And looking to next year, you're going to definitely need someone to fill that role of the primary option for the offense.
Yeah, especially at the guard spot, Lexi Bowles and then Maya Wong as well. But if they're not really losing a lot besides of Juju Redmond, though. They return, I believe, the rest of their starters, including people off the bench, only losing Newlands, Kudelka, and Juju Redmond. And Kudelka and Newland haven't really played as much as they were previously in their Redbird careers. So they're still in a good position next year, but losing your best player and arguably the best player in the whole entire conference
that's going to be tough to replace. I think there's really no replicating Juju Redmond, but you could maybe replace her through three different players putting up those same points. But now let's move things to the diamond, because as we tease, we have Jared Hart coming on the show in just a few minutes. And this was a huge opening weekend for Redbird baseball. They started off the season upsetting the number 2-ranked Arkansas Razorbacks. And even though they lost the next two games, they were still in those. They out-hit the Razorbacks on Saturday in a loss, and then only lost by one run on Sunday, or maybe two runs, but still they had three really close games against tough opponents, because we've seen in the past where they face an SEC opponent or a Big 12 where maybe they'll steal one game, but then the other two they'll lose by like 10 runs or something. This was a Redbird team that looked like they belonged in that series.
Yeah, definitely. Their offense was there, you're saying, out-hitting everything, and their pitching staff was arguably the most impressive, because last year we all kind of knew that they just needed a revamped bullpen, even start everywhere kind of in their pitching area, and that a lot of scariness happened on Friday with Lucier going down, and that luckily came out to be something not as serious, I believe, as what we first saw it and thought. on a Friday, because watching that was a scary sight to see.
Yeah, definitely good to see him get off on his own power, for sure. But maybe this could be like a start of a theme for the Redbirds this year with just resiliency, because you lose your ace. He only goes 1 1/3, mm-hmm. and then you come back and you only hold the Razorbacks to 4 hits, and 2 of them being home runs. So, I mean, their only 2 runs came off of 2 hits. Other than that, you keep them off the board. Basically a 3-2 win, really gutty effort from the team. And they, like you said, they've been in every game against them. So just something that they can definitely build on. And it definitely helps being the first game of the year, too, just to start off your year that hot.
Yeah, I think that's huge, because talking about a pitching staff that knew going into the year they needed to improve. That's what Coach Holm talked about in his media day, was that they need more from the pitching staff. And then you lose your go-to guy 4 outs into the season off a scary play. The bullpen had to step up in a hostile environment. And we saw our guest on the show tonight, Jared Hart, had two separate sets of scoreless innings on Friday and Sunday. He went 4 scoreless innings. He came in some high-pressure situations.
Yeah, he was
and Hart was someone who had an ERA over 8 last year and then came out just totally improved. And let's face it, college baseball is for the hitters. Every pitcher has bad stats because you're facing guys with metal bats that could just hit the ball harder than they can the pros. But I think that just speaks on the confidence where this pitching staff is turning a new corner and was able to come in and get some really high leverage outs.
And like, even looking at some of the other players in the bullpen, like coming in and Hart coming in from community college and at Wabash, even he had a high ERA. And even before that at the junior college before. And it just really depends on like the new players that are kind of coming in here for Illinois State. They got a knot of new faces over at catcher in the outfield position and everything. A lot of people to step in and take advantage of those new spots that were left over. And they got a very difficult schedule, especially coming up this week. They're going to be taking on a Western Carolina, who actually right now leads Division One in all of runs scored with 75 already.
So it's not going to get much easier.
So, I mean, it's not going to get much easier. I'm not quite sure what their schedule has been like. They haven't taken out a team like Arkansas yet, obviously, but going into a team, no matter what, that's a lot of runs this early on in the season.
And talking about new faces, new looks, too, I was really intrigued by the starting pitcher on Sunday, because it was Derek Salata, who last season was the Redbird closer out of the pen, and he was probably one of the bullpen pitcher with the highest velocity on his fastball, and which maybe set him up to be so well in that role. But seeing him go to that starter role, that was really intriguing. And he went about 4 2/3 innings, but still, that was interesting to see, because that's the same thing they did with Colton Johnson, where he was like a 2-3 inning swing guy out of the bullpen, like an Andrew Miller type, and then they put him in a starting role, and we saw last year he thrived in that. So if Salata follows on that same trajectory, that could be huge for the Redbirds.
Yeah, coming out of the pen, he led the Redbirds in strikeouts besides all the starters last year. Well, not too terrible of an ERA, 4.95 as well.
For a college pitcher, you'll take that.
That's really good, especially coming out as that closing end. 2-4 on the year. And he made a lot of appearances, too. He was the one Redbird pitcher that he kind of played almost every game, 26 appearances.
Poster,
So he was in there a lot. And that's big, too, coming out. I just feel when you have a closer coming in and next year he's going in as a starter, the much experience you can get at the college level, that's going to be a big impact going towards next year, too.
And then also, too, it just attributes to, like, how much of a team effort it was with the pitching against the Razorbacks.
Yeah.
You didn't come out of that series with a quality start, and you kept the Razorbacks under 5 runs in each game. I find that really impressive and really something good to build on as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And also, too, like, we got to talk about the performance of Ryan Cermak. He had a great series against some quality pitching.
Yeah.
I mean, Cermak, I think it's maybe not a dark horse contender. I'd say I'd make my hot take of the year is that he could win the Valley Player of the Year. He is that talented. He had 11 home runs last year and just highlight reel catches almost every game, switching from third base to the outfield. He just covers a lot of ground out there.
Hit the ball.
I mean, I'm almost worried they're going to I'm worried that they might lose him to the draft this year, because he's draft eligible this season and he's going to put on a show in the Valley. Like, it's going to be tough to possibly part with him.
I know it's just 3 games, but it's against Arkansas. 3 games, slugging percent at .818 right now.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane. Batted .455 in that game, 5 hits throughout those. But Kyle Soberano also, great defender, great on the bat as well. Already has that one error, though. I mean, last year he had 1 total. Maybe he'll just keep that one
just
error.
Go perfect after that.
Yeah.
One more thing about Cermak, saying that he does everything, is in fall ball, in the summer, the Redbirds experimented with possibly having him come in as a bullpen pitcher, too, that apparently his velocity got up to 95 on the gun. So we might see him coming on the mound
sources,
this year, too.
Like, whoa, that's fast.
This was legit. So
yeah.
We'll stick around and see how that turns out, if we do see him on the pitcher's mound, too. But because Coach Holm did tease that could be something we see in his media day. So, but we're going to keep talking about Redbird baseball. When we come back, Jared Hart's going to join the show to talk more about that Arkansas series. So stick around. You're listening to Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Hi, this is Paul DeYoung, former ISU Redbird, current St. Louis Cardinal. You're listening to Red Zone on WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone. Leo Stodher, Joey Dwyer, Joe Kennedy. Now we're joined by Jared Hart of the Illinois State baseball team. Jared was the pitcher of record in Friday's upset win over Arkansas and was recently named the MVC Pitcher of the Week. So with those two things, and then you were retweeted by Pitching Ninja this weekend, has your phone stopped ringing after just what was a really good start to the season? How's that been for you?
No, it's been going crazy this whole time. You know, a lot of followers, a lot of people reaching out and stuff like that. It's been cool. Actually, my high school coach reached out to me and just kind of congratulated me, which is it's really nice to see.
So what was it like, the game against Arkansas, when you guys had the upset? Because that was really all over Twitter, all over everything Illinois State. And so that was just a huge win. And so it must have felt awesome for you guys.
Yeah, it felt awesome to get the upset. I didn't realize I had the win until later in the night, actually. I was, you know, at the hotel with the guys, and I was like, winning pitcher, Jericho. I was like, oh, nice, cool. So, you know, it was great, but, you know, you got to move on and focus on the next game. So that was kind of the priority of the night, was soak it in while you can, but, you know, we're not done yet.
And like soaking it all in and everything, how was the atmosphere there? Because I'm sure they're one of the most energetic crowds, especially in the SEC. How was that? And have you ever played in something like that?
The only thing similar that, you know, I can relate to is Oklahoma State last year. That's a similar atmosphere, but it doesn't match up to it. Nothing can really prepare you for an atmosphere like that. You know, the fans are fully engaged. It was great. You know, it's very exciting to be in, even if it's against you.
Yeah. And then in that game on Friday, Jordan Lucier exited the game after a scary comebacker. And so you guys had to go to the bullpen much earlier in the game than expected. How does that affect you as a reliever coming in, knowing that the plan's thrown off maybe by a couple innings, that you're going to be called to action sooner than you might have thought?
It doesn't affect me too much. It was hard to see that out of Luz. You know, he's a great kid. He works hard. But, you know, luckily we have a Colin Wyman in our back pocket for a situation that calls for him, which is long relief. And he gave us a shot. He kept us in the ballgame really well. And, you know, kudos to him.
And so when you came onto the mound on Friday, you had kind of a rocky start, hitting the first batter, walking the next. How did you kind of collect yourself on the mound and get set to complete the task at hand?
Yeah, so I came in, I was a little wild to start off, you know, I couldn't get my heart rate down, and I threw a slider, and I believe it was to Hurts, or not Hurts, Battles, threw a slider to Battles that he chased, and I was like, what am I, why am I overthinking this, you know, just do what I do. So once I got that first chase, I had it from there.
And then on Sunday, you might have had even like a more impressive relief. You came in, bases juice, and you got out of the jam. What was like preparing, or what prepares you for those type of moments?
You got to go over it in your head beforehand, months before. That's where every player dreams of, you know, as a pitcher. I'm thinking about being the guy that you call to with bases loaded, just like a hitter wants to come up, bases loaded, tying run at the plate, you know. It's something that you think about for months on end, and it was great to fulfill that.
And then before you came to Illinois State, you had a stop at Wabash Valley Community College, which is one of the top JUCO programs in the nation. I mean, just looking at some of the alums that come from there, it's like everybody that played there either went D1 or got drafted. How did that atmosphere prepare you to make that transition to Division I baseball here at Illinois State?
Yeah, so it's a great program with a bunch of great people. So you surround yourself with winners, and you kind of, even if you didn't feel like that beforehand, you're going to feel like that afterwards, that you're in a winning program. You're in a program with all these big names. So that kind of prepares you for Division I baseball.
And so now that you are playing Division I with the Redbirds, what does the pitching staff look like this season? New guys in the rotation and in the bullpen. And what can the fans expect from the pitchers this season?
The fans can expect, you know, a lot more of what happened this weekend, because we didn't even get to some of our guys. You know, there was a stamp for Keegan Gagliardo to come in. He's a great left-handed pitcher. You know, we got transferred from Pitt that, you know, he's a great lefty also. Throws kind of funky. So that's a lot of fun to watch. You saw Quentin Scherbinski come in, throw hard. Eric Kubitaus got to close out a game. So I just think that there's a lot more there than what meets the eye, because we didn't get to use all the guys, and all the guys are chomping at the bit waiting to go in.
And talking about the pitching staff, you started one game last season. Was that something new, or have you kind of done that before? And would you expect to maybe start another game this year?
I started all through high school. I'm sure a lot of guys that pitch at the Division I level started at some point in their career. I hadn't really done it up until that point. I don't really plan to start anytime this season. I'm really comfortable in my role right now. I'm open to it. Whatever the coaches and the team needs for me to do, I will do my best to fulfill that.
So how does that adjustment work going from somebody that used to start a ton in high school to now being a reliever? Because you're coming in possibly in situations with bases loaded, just facing the lineup later in the game. Did you have to adjust that in your game, whether that was at junior college or here at ISU?
The biggest adjustment is learning to not conserve your energy. So as a starter, you're kind of easing off the gas a little bit, going, all right, well, I got to make this last for, you know, hopefully 6, 7, even 8 innings. You come in for 1 or 2 innings, it's pedal to the metal.
And do you prefer being a reliever now that you have a lot of experience doing both? Which one do you like more?
Oh, I love being a reliever. It's a lot of fun being able to come in multiple times in a weekend to come into a high leverage situation. Like I said, bases loaded. That's something that everyone dreams about doing. So I love being a reliever. It's a lot of fun.
And how does starting in warm weather states affect your training? Because this is really the first time you're playing outdoors this weekend.
Yeah. So throwing in warm weather, your body just in general feels a lot better. I'm sure that's kind of a given, but I grew up in Texas. So I had warm weather going year round. And then moving to Illinois, it was a little bit tough for the first few seasons to get used to the cold weather, how I warm up and stuff like that. So going back to Arkansas was, you know, just like being at home.
And we talked about how you made the adjustment to the bullpen as a reliever. I don't know if you saw over the summer that PETA wanted to rename the bullpen to the Arm Barn. Do you have any thoughts on that, or do you have something else you'd rather see the bullpen be called?
Well, that's a good question. You know, if I had a couple of days to think about it, I'm sure I could come up with something creative, but Arm Barn does sound pretty cool.
Yeah, right? Yeah, like, Leo was telling us about that earlier, and like, Arm Barn's kind of sick.
Yeah.
Like, it's got a really nice ring.
Dumbbells out there.
It's not bad.
It's like bullpen doesn't even like make sense either, too, I feel like, in a certain way. I don't know.
So, obviously, having played baseball all throughout your life, you probably watched a lot of baseball. Who's the one guy, when you look back watching MLB as a kid, who's the guy that you like admired growing up, who you wanted to be?
Well, I was a big fan of Tim Lincecum growing up. I got away from the mechanics piece because not everyone can be him. But whenever I was little and I was on the mound, I would try and emulate his mechanics because I wasn't always a bigger guy or anything like that. You know, even now I'm 6 foot, which is kind of like average for pitching. But growing up, I was always a smaller kid, so I wanted to generate that power from somewhere. So I always did the big corkscrew, the head whip, and stuff like that.
And over the offseason, what was something that you were trying to elevate your game on coming off of last year?
During last season, or during the offseason, it was mostly just honing in what I had. I felt like I had the tools and I wasn't really utilizing them. So I wanted to focus on a small piece of mechanics, not really the big interest. The big interest was throwing effective strikes and how to use my pitches.
And then now that you got that worked on in your game going into this season, it's going to be a tough schedule even after this Arkansas series last weekend, 16 games against ranked opponents. How is that looking at the schedule, knowing that it doesn't get any easier? Is that something, you know, as a pitcher, you just kind of crave those tough games against really good teams?
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to the upsets and stuff like that. And then hopefully the upsets become regular things to where, hopefully later in the season that we're ranked, you know, similar to those guys and so on and so forth to where it's not an upset. It's like, oh, Illinois State won again. That's what I'm hoping for later in the season.
And last season, it was a tough exit to the conference tournament. Are you guys building on the momentum that you had last year? Because last year you guys were a pretty good team. Are you trying to capture that momentum and push forward through the season? Like, what's the mindset?
The mindset mostly this year is that it's a brand new squad. We got a lot of returning guys, but we got a lot of new guys also. So what we're focusing on this year is letting the older guys lead, not only vocally, but by example. So you got guys like Kyle Soberano and Ryan Cermak and Jake McCall. Those guys are people that we can look up to, kind of.
You're talking about those three guys, and all three, I believe, have some of the best defense in the whole Valley. Can you just talk about them and how their style of play on defense helps you as a pitcher?
Ball in the air to the outfield, I'm confident. I can walk off the field. I don't really have to, you know, oh, is he going to catch that? ball in the air. I'm like, yep, Ryan Cermak's probably there. It could be 105 off the bat. I'm like, yeah, he's probably got it. And then ball on the ground, anywhere really, I'm in the same boat. So it's great having a great defense behind you. We got Tyler Wotman, which is new, but he's great defensively. So any pitch near the zone, he's probably going to get you.
And so we've had Coach Holm on the show before, and one of the things he says he likes to do is eat with the players because you kind of get to let your guard down around them and have that camaraderie build. And so Justin Schubert then mentioned that he likes to cook for the players. Is there a specific meal Coach Holm's prepared that's been your favorite, or how's that relationship been?
Yeah, he has this up to the house sometimes. So he makes some pretty good barbecue, I will say, you know, pork stuff like that, yeah.
All right. Okay. This might be a little bit off the wall, but I, as a baseball guy, do you have any experience playing slow pitch softball?
Well, funny enough, my dad played a lot of slow pitch softball growing up, and that is, I believe, the reason why I am not a good hitter.
So we have a big inner office debate about 12 inch versus 16 inch, and so I want to know what your take is on that, because we've got some strong opinions around you.
I don't really have an opinion on it. I that was the only experience I had as I was a little kid. It's the only reason I hit right-handed, which is not ideal.
Yeah. When you were a kid, did you ever play other positions? I mean, I feel like when you grow up, you kind of play all around the field. Maybe it just depends where, what system you're in, where you're coming from. But what other spots in the field did you play when you were younger?
Being left-handed, I played a lot of outfield. I wasn't really known for hitting all that much throughout my whole life. So I wasn't known for my arm and stuff like that, especially from the outfield. So played a lot of right field, a little bit on left. And then it was my junior year. We had a problem with our first baseman or something like that, his defense. And they asked me if I could play first base. I said, yeah, sure. And I played a little first base. But it was funny because our pitcher could hit really well, so I'd get DH'd for by the pitcher. It was a little awkward. defensive first baseman.
Do you think Coach Holm, if he asked you to go play first base, you could go play first base right now?
Maybe.
Hey, you do whatever it takes for the team, probably.
Absolutely. Even if I didn't glove it, I'd chest it up or anything.
keep it in front of you, yeah.
So then, one more question is that your Twitter handle is Heart Attack, a little pun off your last name. Is that a self-inflicted nickname, or is that something people call you? Where's the story behind that?
Junior year, I got moved up to varsity for pitching, and the coach was like, God, you just give me a heart attack every time you go in, because I was still doing the Tim Lincecum thing. And it was real quirky, and they were like, I don't know where the ball is going. I don't know if you know where it's going, but it's a strike most of the time. You give me a heart attack. And I was like, yeah. He's like, it stuck with me. So Heart Attack was my nickname in high school.
And it's an awesome nickname. Yeah,
that's like a perfect nickname, yeah.
We'd like to thank Jared for coming on the show and wish the baseball team the best of luck this weekend when they go to face West Carolina. When we come back, Brendan McInerney is going to join the show, and we're going to talk some NCAA basketball. That's next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
I'm Dan Muller, basketball coach of your Illinois State Redbirds, and you're listening to the Red Zone only on 103.3 WZND.
And welcome back to the Red Zone. Leo Stoddard, Joe Kenny, and Dane Dreyfus. Then Brennan McInerney now joins the show. Brennan is coming to bring some college basketball insight here because we are fastly approaching March. We got Arch Madness next week. The conference tourneys are just going to start rolling in, and it's going to be one of the best times of the year coming up soon.
BMAC, when do we sleep?
We sleep in May.
I mean, this is like the time of the year, though. You know, I mean, All-Star break just ended. NBA is not going around right now, and I think college basketball has some interesting games coming up in this week, this weekend, and then we got the conference tournaments picking up. But the interesting thing that happened over last weekend, Leo, what happened?
Yeah, well, we had the Juwan Howard, the Michigan versus Wisconsin brawl. The NCAA came down pretty hard on Howard, suspending him for the five remaining games and fining him $40,000. It was just one of those big stories that seems like all of college basketball is talking about, and I feel like that's what's consuming the news cycle right now.
I mean, like, that just seems like the opposite of one shining moment, especially for the NCAA. Like, it was one of the biggest displays of immaturity, and it was absolutely diabolical, that slap.
And I'm honestly just kind of surprised it was only five games. Like, I just, this is something you never see in sports in general. And I think if it's any other league, especially professional, I think they're going to get suspended even longer than five games.
It's a tricky situation because he was mad Wisconsin called a timeout. Then he's having his players press against a bunch of Wisconsin's walk-ons. It's frustrating to see that because he was going at it with the Wisconsin assistant coach. It's frustrating to see because you expect coaches to kind of be at a higher level of self-control, of restraint. For sure. And so to see them doing that, it sets a horrible example for the players because three players got suspended out of that too. And you're showing if it's okay for the coaches to fight, then the players can be doing it too. And it just was a tough look for college basketball and a tough look for both of those programs kind of.
And
yeah, and I think the wording was intentionally chosen by Michigan in their statement to make the punishment sound definitely more harsh than really just like the slap on the wrist really was. They literally just said suspended for the rest of the season. But as you mentioned, it's only five games. Yeah. So, you know, it seems very convenient that he'll be back just in time for the Big Ten conference tournament and possibly the NCAA tournament because right now it seems like Michigan's squarely on that bubble.
But also that was the suspension handed out by Michigan. I don't even know if the NCAA really threw anything aside to the fine.
I don't think they did. Yeah. I think it was like Michigan and then the NCAA saw like, oh, they took it like five games. They probably thought that was fair.
It was almost like maybe Michigan was trying to get out ahead of it by suspending him. So that
they absolutely did. Well, like they knew what they were doing.
Something like this has kind of happened with Howard before. February 2021, he would run out of the court asking for a stoppage of play from Ohio State players who were in a timeout after getting hit in the head. He runs out of the middle of a court screaming at players. And then later on, a couple of months later, in the Big Ten tournament, he got furious with Maryland head coach Mark Turgeon at the time when the team was up 10 points and he got ejected from the game. And also, he's done a similar situation where he was the team that was up by 10-plus points, calls a timeout under a minute left to get his subs into the game. So it just, I think it was just like a heat of the moment. He's a very competitive guy, and like that's just how some people are. But when you are a head coach like that, you can't be doing things like punching another coach.
And this guy was a serious candidate to be the next Bulls head coach after Jim Boylan.
I mean,
Thank God for Arturis Karnisovas going with Billy Donovan. So that no more Jim Boylan and no Juwan Howard, because that would not be a good fit for this culture.
See, now I'm wondering is, say this actually happened back in like early January when the Big Ten play just started. Like, would the punishment still be five games, or what would the justification be had it happened at the halfway point of the season compared to now?
I think even there they would have been like rest of the regular season, but could still come back from the postseason. But at that point, Michigan was still like pretty much out of the bubble picture right now, and right now they're right in it. Probably the last team in. Last night they got a big win at home against Rutgers. And so it is a big five stretch of games for Michigan without their head coach, and two of their players were out last night. But I think it would have been a little bit longer than five games, Brendan.
I think it just is all about the timing. But I mean, one thing for Michigan, though, is that their assistant coach was the former head coach at St. John's. So you have an assistant coach with head coaching experience. I think that really helps things, too. And we mentioned that Michigan is one of the teams on the bubble. So let's talk a little bit about some other bubble teams, because we're heading right before conference tourney season. Mm-hmm. It's a time where a lot of teams are trying to solidify their case for an at-large bid.
Yeah, there's a lot of teams on the bubble. So we're taking a look at Joe Lunardi. I feel like that's where a lot of people look at when it comes to Bubble Watch, one of the bracketologists at ESPN. Right now, three teams that are the last four in Michigan we've been talking about, Indiana, another team in Memphis. I look at Memphis and Michigan. Those are two teams that came into this season as top 10 teams in the season, and both have just completely fallen off, but both still have elite talent.
I feel like those are two teams that always get a lot of hype preseason but haven't quite lived up to it. We saw Memphis won the NIT last year, but those are teams I feel like, and at the start of the year, the people making the rankings want to see both of them do well. But I think that is a testament that even though they faltered a little bit, they're still in the hunt now, that it might not have been as pretty as imagined, but they're still making some noise here at the time of the year when it matters to be playing your best basketball.
Not to mention, too, just the quality of the conference that the Big Ten is this year, with Michigan and Indiana being bubble teams. I go into every game watching the Big Ten, and I am never sold on any team being like the favorite, like, oh, they're going to walk away with this game. The quality of talent in the conference
especially
is just,
when you're away, too.
Absolutely,
yeah. Away, like, it's like,
it's anyone's game. I think Rutgers has been that team that just shows up, and it could be any team that shows up.
Yeah, especially at their home ground. If they played the NCAA tournament at the Rack Arena in Rutgers, they would at least make the Elite Eight. It's like a for sure gimme at that point.
I mean, they had that like half court buzzer beater against Purdue when Purdue was one of the top teams in the nation. It just seems like they always just bring that unpredictable element, and that's what made it really fun, because you talk about how just competitive the Big Ten is. That's probably the conference tournament I'm most excited to watching, is just because it feels like everybody's so even in that. Even we saw Illinois, they took down Michigan State without two of their best players. There's just so much parity in the Big Ten that it really just feels so unpredictable going into the conference tourney.
Yeah.
I think it's also interesting when you think about how different the college basketball landscape is compared to college football. Because in college football, year in, year out, you know, it's always going to be the SEC at the top.
Definitely.
They're definitely on their own tier, yeah. Probably followed by, you know, Big Ten and Big 12. But then there's a major drop-off. But in college basketball, it seems it's so unpredictable every year. And, you know, you could have a year where, like, last year the ACC sent the most teams to the tournament just last year, and now they're projected to send the fifth most teams.
And also last year was, like, the one year, I feel like, in college basketball where you had Baylor and Gonzaga, who pretty much were penciled in as Final Four teams. And they, of course, ended up meeting each other in national championship. And one thing, though, we're talking about these conferences at the moment. There's been a lot of good conferences, the Big Ten with 9 selections in Joe Lunardi's bracketology this week. But the ACC has just fallen off in a big way. Like, teams are on the bubble right now, including North Carolina and Miami. And then you also look at Virginia Tech, too, as well, and Notre Dame, Wake Forest. I mean, the only lock at the moment is probably the Duke Blue Devils, like, a for sure get in. And it's kind of weird looking at the ACC as a team with only one team.
Right, because normally
25.
You could feel like the ACC is going to be the more competitive conference. And how do you guys feel about Duke this year in Coach K's last season? Because they really struggled last year. You had Coach K saying we shouldn't even be playing basketball because his team was just that bad last year. But it seems like they've really rebounded. Are we feeling confident about them going into the tournament, or are they going to choke it in the Sweet 16 again?
As usual, choke for sure.
I don't think so. I mean, I think this team is still very good. They got a top three pick, Paolo Banchero. AJ Griffin's playing like a lottery pick now, too, as well, for the Blue Devils. And they got a big center in Williams down in the paint. So they have the players, too, but they've taken some not so great losses, Florida State, Virginia most recently, too, as well, in a very close game, and then Ohio State. So those aren't terrible losses in a way, but they're also games, if you are going to be trying to win out in March, that you should be beating those teams.
And I think this is a Duke team where in years past, you know, and this is how it is for most Blue Bloods, you know, Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, where it's almost an all-freshman team full of five-star players, yet they're still freshmen, so they're still going to have the road bumps. But I think this Duke team has more of a veteran presence, even though you did say they do have a top three projected freshman.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think they just have a different feel of them this year, and I think they'll do better in March this season.
And Joe, your guys at Gonzaga are once again atop the national rankings. Do you think they have another deep run in them going all the way to the championship again? Because you've been riding them in three up, three down, and it's worked so far. But
I mean,
23-2 this year. How are you feeling about the Bulldogs?
I always be riding the Bulldogs. But one thing that's kind of surprising about not just Gonzaga, but their conference, West Coast Conference, you have San Francisco and St. Mary's. St. Mary's is ranked in the top 23, or ranked number 23 in the nation. And then San Francisco is also another team that's going to the tournament. But with Gonzaga, I think they're easily another team that has that opportunity to go farther. Right now, they're probably the hottest team in the entire country. Maybe Arizona could be put in that category. But with the freshman Chet Holmgren, Drew Timmy back
on
this team.
He is that guy. Like, Chet Holmgren's that
guy. Yeah, their front court is probably one of the most deadly in all of the country, I think.
And maybe now talking about conferences, let's bring things back home to the Missouri Valley Conference.
Yeah.
Because we saw last year, two teams from the Valley made the tournament. Can we see that again this year? Because I feel like it's going to be tough because the top of the Valley, mm-hmm. these teams have taken more losses. It's not like where you had Drake going one loss until the conference tournament. Is this a year where we're only going to see one Valley team make the playoffs? And is anybody beating Loyola?
Unfortunately, I think this is going to be a one-bid league for the MVC this year. Winner of Arch Madness is pretty much going to go. It's not that Loyola, Drake, Missouri State are bad. I mean, they're all 20-win teams. It's not like they don't deserve to go. I think it's the fact that you're going to get the bid stealers, the teams that aren't projected anywhere close to the NCAA tournament right now, but are going to end up winning their conference tournament and, you know, steal a potential at-large bid from these teams.
Two, you look at it, you mentioned Loyola, Loyola, Missouri State, and Drake. They've all kind of beat
and
up
Northern
on each
Iowa.
Other, too. In Northern Iowa, too. They've been
Northern
in the mix.
Northern Iowa.
The teams at the top of the Valley have all played so well against each other that it's probably hurting the conference's chances of getting two bids.
Like, Northern Iowa, they really screwed up with their non-conference season this year. I mean, they lost to Nichols, Vermont, Richmond, Bradley in a
is what
game.
You're saying.
Wyoming, who's been really good. Liberty, who's still been really good. Those are all teams that I've labeled off as solid non-Power 5 teams. And then they've also lost to Arkansas and a couple others. But, I mean, coming into the conference season, no one really expected you and I to kind of rebound the way they did. Coming into the year, they were tabbed, I believe, as preseason favorites, A.J. Green, preseason player of the year. And right now they've been one of the best teams in the Valley past couple of games. I mean, they've taken down Missouri State. Tough loss against Loyola, though, lost by about 27. But I think that Northern Iowa is one of the most deadly teams heading in the Arch.
Well, and all it takes, too, is, like, with the parity in the conference, all it takes is for the one of the big dogs to get knocked out early, and then a team that we're not even talking about, like, who knows, even Illinois State, if they just get hot. Like, I know, but that's what happens. You just have to get hot at the right time. Like, well, this is March. Anything can happen.
That's what I think is going to happen. It's almost like the 2020 tournament where we're talking all about the favorite seeds, and then, like, a team like Valpo or someone's just going to go on a run in Arch.
I mean,
and, like,
look at Georgetown last year. Like, a team... I couldn't. It's like literally looking at the Illinois State Redbirds, though. Like last year, they had this very bad season. Next year, they go on to conference play. This year, they've won one game in conference play, but they stole a bid. And you could go on and on with teams throughout the past 20 years. Got Liberty in 2012, taking a couple bids. And then, like Jim Varano back with North Carolina State, that's how he kind of became a powerhouse. He took a North Carolina State team that won a conference tournament they probably shouldn't have. In the next 2 years, they went on to win a national championship. So, I mean, crazy things happen. It's March, and as BMAC and I said at the beginning of this segment, we sleep in May. Crazy things happen.
That's right.
And, I mean, just talking about Arch Madness next week, I'm so excited for to watch that because I feel like the Valley this year, well, maybe it's not as deep as it has been in previous years. It's been competitive. We've seen a lot of upsets. We've seen some close games, and I'm excited to get to see Joe and Brendan. You guys get to go to that next week. Even if the Birds stay isn't that long, you'll still, worst-case scenario, get to see some really good hoops on Thursday and maybe a little bit on Friday.
Yeah, so Thursday we'll see. We got the schedule already put out for at least Thursdays. We got Illinois State versus Indiana State as the first game at 6 p.m. Thursday night. Then after that, Valpo against Evansville. So, I mean, the Birds play Indiana State actually this Saturday, so both teams are going to get a nice look at each other. ISU lost by 3 points when they met previous in the season. So Saturday night's going to be a big matchup because we were talking about for the women's game, too. Women's team, they lost twice to Southern Illinois this year. So maybe kind of want ISU to maybe not win Saturday. So I don't know. It just feel like the mojo they would rather win on Thursday.
That's the same thing.
Because it doesn't matter if they win or lose this game at all. They're already put into that spot.
And that's the same problem they had last year in their final series of the season. They were facing Northern Iowa. The seeds were already locked up, but they lost both games to the Panthers, then lost to the Panthers in Arch. So while it is tough to beat a team three times in a year, we've unfortunately seen it happen here, which is just tough to watch.
Yeah. And looking at the conference, who do you guys think coming out of Arch Madness will take that MVC championship crown? Because there's really just a toss-up of three teams specifically, and you could also throw in a couple others with Bradley, maybe SIU.
I don't know how you could go. I'm with BMAC. I don't know how you can go against Loyola. Yeah. Like the perennial winners, like they always make it happen in March. So
I just feel like there's like an edge, maybe not so much, but like an edge on the other teams, knowing that this team's heading out of their conference and flaking out of their conference, and two better, arguably better teams this year, Murray State easily better than Loyola this year, and then Belmont are coming in, and I think people are just fed up with them. They want to see them leave and send them out with a loss.
That's what I was about to say. I kind of want to see Loyola get their party spoiled at Arch Madness. I wouldn't sleep on a team like Drake. They've fallen to 12-5, but maybe they could give the Ramblers a run because that's a very veteran-heavy team, too, over in Drake. So maybe they could give that shocker and dispatch Loyola.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun weekend, and Friday night is really when all the teams are going to get playing. And who knows? Who knows how long Brendan and I will be there?
Right.
Probably will be Friday morning, but we would hope and love to stay there until Sunday night, Brendan.
Right.
But be unreal.
We'll see. That would be unreal. Probably story of my life.
And we'll keep Joe's story going here as maybe he has another comeback in him. We're going to play 3 up, 3 down after the break, so stick around for that. You're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Going up, coming down.
It's the 3 up, 3 down.
3 up, 3 down.
Only on the Pulse of Redbird Nation. 103.3 WZND.
You heard that sounder, and it is championship week of the 3 up, 3 down. The trophy is in the building. There is a chance that a new winner will be crowned here. It's a 3 up, 3 down for the last time of the semester, the last time of our college careers. Mr. Kennedy, explain to our great audience what it is the 3 up, 3 down is and what the standings are looking like right now.
Yes, so we pick 6 games that are happening throughout the college basketball landscape. 3 favorites, 3 underdogs, according to ESPN's matchup predictor. One game can be over 80% favorite, and then you have to pick one game that's in the Missouri Valley Conference as well. So taking a look up at the standings, we'll go from bottom to top here. The guest is at dead even at 18-18, sitting at 500 in fifth place. Then we got myself after a very, very tough start to this.
Brutal.
At 20-16 in fourth. Then we have Steve at 22-14 in third. Leo in second at 23-13. And then Joey in first at 27-9.
I don't know how.
I don't get it.
This
kid does his picks
bro.
Like when we're doing this segment. I don't get it. I mean, it's just all luck, but. Hey, man, Joey.
I think we all just have
to
agree we're conspiring against Joey this week. Yeah. It doesn't matter how the rest of the standings shake out as long as Joey's not.
Yeah, we've been – we were DMing the Long Beach State head coach, so I think we got some inside
intel. We got some point shading
going
on this week.
Yeah, we do.
And I'll get things started with my first game. I don't think anyone else is going to have this game.
Okay.
It's my Valley game and my over 80% game. We've got Missouri State as a 94.8% favorite visiting the Evansville Purple Aces.
Yep.
And
that's a tough one.
This is a tough one to pick, but I think I'm going with Missouri State as the heavy favorites here. Evansville just hasn't been that good. Missouri State is good, so I don't know if anybody else has that, but that's
Joey
my pick.
Does.
Evansville is a very tough team to play. So I'm going to start things off in the MVC. So I've been picking both against and with this team, and that's Missouri State. And to wrap up the regular season at Evansville on Saturday, it's going to be a cakewalk,
oh, wow.
As Leo was probably saying.
Great
I think
minds think alike.
94.8% favorites when I checked, so go Bears over the Purple Aces.
Yeah, I think we're going to sweep the board here. We're going with Missouri State at Evansville. I mean, you couldn't have said it much better than that. 94.8% favorites for a reason, so we'll go with the Bulldogs.
You know, Joey's got the same thing, but if yeah. I was picking, I like Evansville. I like the Purple Aces.
All right.
That's Dane's pick, but Joey, he's a fraud. He's going with Missouri State as well. He's just copying you guys.
Steve Cease in his first game is going with Southern Mississippi at North Texas. The Mean Green are a 98.9% favorite. Those are good odds, Steve.
D-Max likes that team too as well, I believe.
Brennan is a huge North Texas fan, and for my next favorite, we're going with a school I'm a huge fan of, Coppin State.
Ooh.
At Maryland Eastern Shore. They're a 76 point, MES is a 76.2% pick. That's what the fans call them, MES.
Yeah.
And I'm going with the Shore of Maryland Eastern.
Okay. I like Maryland Northern Shore. They're one of my favorite
teams. They're huge rivals.
Yeah, I know. But what has the world come to? Is the West Coast Conference all that not bad anymore, boys? I mean, entering tonight's matchup in San Francisco, 79.9% favorites. This is going to be the first time I'm selecting the Gonzaga Bulldogs as below 80% favorites. I'm not going my above 80 on Gonzaga this week, so I'm taking them over San Francisco tonight in a big game in the West Coast Conference.
We'll swing it back over to the SEC.
Ooh, okay.
Vanderbilt at Mississippi State. Okay. I love Mississippi State here. Vanderbilt, they got Sky Pippen Jr. as a point guard. That's it. That's all they have. So I'm going to go with Mississippi State at home, 77.9% favorites. I think the Bulldogs win.
So Joey has Milwaukee at Indiana University, Purdue University of Indianapolis. He likes Milwaukee as a 79.8% favorite. And I'm going to go with the Dreyfus curse here. I love the 3-23 I'm telling you, I'm cursing him. Like I'm gonna fade him today.
So at last week's show, Joey was huge on them because they're a team right now that hold tryouts. They put on their social media that they're holding just tryouts for anyone on campus to join the team because they have 6 or 7 scholarship players.
And I'm taking them.
But hey, Milwaukee man, go
for Steve's next game. He's going with a game out east. He's got Navy at Colgate. Colgate's a 73% on the dot block. And he's going with them there.
I like Crest.
I see what you did there. Toothpaste.
Yeah.
for my last favorite, we're going with Binghamton playing at New Hampshire. New Hampshire's a 75.8% favorite. And that's where Ralph Cox from the movie Miracle, where he played his college hockey at. Nothing to do with basketball, nothing to do with them being favorites there. But that's my fun fact about New Hampshire I'm picking them.
All right, for my third pick, I'm going to do the unthinkable here. So there is talk, we've been saying, that this West Coast Conference has improved. Could have 3 to 4 teams in this year's tournament. And there even is another team from the WCC inside that top 25, and that's St. Mary's at number 23, and they host the Gonzaga Bulldogs tonight, on Saturday actually, and a chance to make a statement win. So this is going to be the second time that I'm picking Gonzaga under 80 pick, and they're going to hopefully not lose their first conference game in over 3 years, so I'm taking the Zags right there, and another time under 80.
All right, for my last favorite, we're going to go with the Horizon League. We're going to keep it in-state, too. Milwaukee at UIC. UIC is a 77.4% favorite. I mean, Lee are big Chicago guys, so I'm going to back the Flames.
Ooh, okay. And they're coming into our conference next year, so, you know, I got to support them.
That's right.
Looks like next up, Joey has taken the game UC San Diego at Long Beach State as his favorite. He likes Long Beach State at 79.5%. You're going to see a little theme. Joey is loving the beach. He's feeling the weather. So we'll follow up on that in a little bit.
Yeah, he loves the beach. It's been all year long for Joey Dwyer, and it's right for him to end that with the beach.
We're all playing into our bits a little bit here in this final week, so we got to keep that going. For Steve's last favorite, he's going with A team I've picked a few times this year, VCU, is a 75% favorite on the road against UMass. So he's going with VCU there. And for my first underdog here, we got one of my favorite mascot battles of the weekend. We got the North Florida Ospreys playing at the Stetson Hatters. The Hatters come in as a 45.5% dog, and I'm going to go with the dog, and I'm going to go with them there.
All right, so my first underdog that I'll be looking at will be in Florida Atlantic Owls traveling down to Old Dominion tomorrow night. Jalen Hunter, the Owls, is fresh off a 20-point performance against Western Kentucky, and I think he's going to be the main man again tomorrow at Old Dominion. Owls are 42.7 underdogs, and I think they're going to make it out to victory, though.
My first under game, we're going to the Ivy League, Penn at Dartmouth. Penn, 44.8% favorites. Their mascot's the Quakers. Reminds me of Quaker Oats. I like their granola bars, so I'm going to go with Penn.
That's a great pick. I mean, I love how you wrap that all up to granola bars, I think. Yep.
I mean, if we're going with the theme, Joey went with the theme of the great mascot matchup as well, with the St. Louis University Billikens playing the Richmond Spiders. He likes the St. Louis University Billikens as the 42% underdog. So I like the Spiders mascot better. So once again, I would fade Joey.
I don't know either of the mascots in this upcoming game. I'm sure one of you degenerates knows it, as we have Steve's first underdog. He's got New Orleans as a 49.1% underdog going against Southeastern Louisiana, and he's rolling with Nolan's here.
You're going next.
Yep, for my next underdog, we're going with Jacksonville as a 45.9% underdog. They're facing Florida Gulf Coast. I'm rolling with the Dolphins of Jacksonville.
Okay, so I'm going to be going with Cleveland State heading north to take on Detroit Mercy Titans in a monster battle in the Horizon League. Guys, I don't get why the Vikings are underdogs in this game, as they're atop the conference standings with a 15-4 record. Meanwhile, the Titans are 7th in the conference with a 9-6 mark. So I'm taking Cleveland State as a 43.8% dog in this one.
My next under game, we're going to the ACC, Virginia Tech at Miami. Virginia Tech is a 49.8% underdog. I love the Hokies. They have a really fast-paced offense, shoot a lot of threes. Those are always fun college basketball teams to watch, so Virginia Tech is the pick.
Loving it.
Keeping it quick, Joey is going with Texas State as a 45% underdog at Troy, so he likes the Bobcats in this matchup. Right?
We do not like the Bobcats on this show. No. We are not fans of the Bobcats or Bobcat Radio. But as we go into Steve's next underdog, we have Bellarmine on the road against Eastern Kentucky. Bellarmine is a 47.3% dog, and that's who Steve likes. For my final game and my final Ivy League game of the week,
we're going
with Yale, the Bulldogs, one of my favorite teams in the Ivy League, one of the most underrated, facing Cornell. The Big Red are the favorites here. Yale's a 46.8% underdog. We don't like Cornell. The only thing to come out of there was Andy Bernard. Let's ride Yale here for the win, possibly the Ivy League Conference crown, too.
Sometimes in life, you got to go back to things that were always working for you. And I wasn't going to pick them in this game, as they were 18.2% underdogs, but we've been talking about going back to our roots. So I'm going to go with the UNC Wilmington Seahawks going up against Delaware on Saturday as 18.2% dogs. And I think my boy Jalen Sims is going to lead the way for UNC Wilmington, who's having a very good year after losing to Illinois State. So go Seahawks, baby.
And my last game is also in the ACC. Last under 50 game, Clemson at Boston College. Boston College is a 44.2% underdog. I like the Eagles here. I'm going with Boston College.
So, Joey, wrapping things up, I think he's just flexing his record on you guys a little bit, because he's rolling with the Beach as 16.1% underdogs against or at UC
Irvine.
He's
done that before, I think.
No, there's no way that hit. So, yeah, that's his pick.
Yeah. I think that's just him just really playing the hits there and going with a bit. For Steve's last game, he's going in the Valley. He's got Loyola on the road against Northern Iowa. Northern Iowa, as a home team, is a 36.7 underdog, and he's rolling with the Panthers there. As we talked about in the NBC, you and I is a scrappy bunch. I think they could maybe get the win there.
Yeah, they're a tough, difficult team to play, and a big matchup, especially heading into Arch Madness next week. Two of the best teams battling against.
And that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you missed any part of this show, you can catch on podcast form on the website in just a little bit. We talked some Redbird women's basketball and baseball. We had Jared Hart on the show to talk about their win over Arkansas. Brendan McInerney came on to talk some college hoops. Dane Dreyfus was the guest host. Joe, what are you giving, passing, failing grade? Will he be welcome on ever again?
Oh, definitely. Dane, you did a great job on the night. I mean, great to hear hear your voice on air and be a part of a show with you. I think you did a great job. Hope the audience loved it too as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'll put a Twitter poll up in just a little bit if you would rather have Dane or Joey on the show for the rest of the semester, and that will be what we go off entirely off of that. But thanks again for everyone for listening, for Jared Hart for coming on the show, for Dane Dreyfuss, for Brendan McNair, and Joe Kennedy. Thanks for listening.
And other past episodes of The Red Zone. Again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.